بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين. Where we left off in the last session, we mentioned that Islam is pure Tawheed, and we only have one religion, and that is Islam. But Muhammadan Islam is the maximum Tawheed, 100% Tawheed is manifested. And so the potential to absolute perfection exists in Muhammadan Islam through the Holy Quran. But Nabi Musa brought Islam, Nabi Isa brought Islam. They brought Tawheed too. But the degree that their Tawheed manifested compared to the Quran, for example, I'm just giving numbers to facilitate what I want to say. So for example, if we say Nabi Musa, the Islam which is manifested there is, for example, 60% compared to the Islam of the Holy Quran. Or that of Nabi Isa, the Islam he gave is 80% compared to the Islam of the Holy Messenger. Here, the protocols and the books given by the prophets, they vary in the degree of perfection. The level of Tawheed varies. The Tawheed of Muhammad and Islam is the most complete. And that's why it's the final religion, because it's complete. If you compare the Tawheed in the Quran with previous books, you can see the difference. But the man-made religions after Islam, which claim to be Tawheedi, they add nothing to the Tawheed given in Muhammadan Islam. So it's only natural that the route to perfection offered in the Holy Quran is much more than the route to perfection offered in previous books. So if pluralism, what we mean, if what is meant, is that all religions have the potential to perfection equally, such a remark is defamatory to the Holy Messenger and the Holy Quran. Because the differences of Tawheed and the differences of perfection between the prophets are a function of the varying degrees of their ascensions. And that of the Holy Messenger was the highest, and the Holy Quran, which is the most complete protocol, was in accordance with such a prophet. So let's say the Islam of Nabi Musa, if it's 60% perfection, the undistorted Islam of Nabi Musa, that is their potential for Tawheed. Now let's say that 60% has been distorted, because their books have been distorted, and make 60% 30%. It still has 30% of perfection. And if someone from the Islam of Nabi Musa, if they were to act upon that 30%, they would have acquired 30% perfection. And their perfection would be more than a Muslim who has the potential for 100%, but they only act 10%. You see, that follower of Musa is of a higher degree, because at least they've acquired 30% of perfection compared to the Muslim who's wasted his or her life and has only acquired 10%. So one shouldn't be complacent. But the point we were trying to make is that if we want to follow the Quran, which is offering the most complete Tawheed, why should we allow distorted Islams get in the way and overcome us and dominate over us? That we're not allowed. That's why we can't submit to non-Islamic guardianship. Doing such would be defamatory to the Holy Quran and to our Holy Messenger. Because they have offered us the complete protocol, and you are submitting to a lesser protocol, be it distorted or not. So that's the first point which one has to bear in mind, and we covered it yesterday. Then we have a principle in legal theory, in Islamic legal theory, usul al-fiqh. Now this principle is studied in all the seminary schools. Everyone accepts this principle. But for some reason, they only limit it to one or two very small examples. It's called the principle of nafyu sabil, negating the way. And what does it mean? It's in relation to a verse in the Holy Quran which ends by saying, وَلَنْ يَجْعَلَ اللَّهُ لِلْكَافِرِينَ عَلَى الْمُؤْمِنِينَ سَبِيلًا. That Allah will never assign for the kafirin, for the kuffar, over the mu'mineen, Allah will never assign a way to overcome the mu'mineen. Ala al-mu'mineen. Allah never assigns a way for the kafirin to overcome the mu'mineen. It doesn't exist. Now, to explain this, I've given a summary from the books of legal theory, and I want to just read this part. It says, this verse is referring to a fact, and the prescription is derived from this Quranic fact and reality. The verse is saying that within Allah's legislation and jurisdiction of do's and don'ts, nothing has been assigned which leads to the actualization of the governance and sovereignty of non-Muslims over Muslims. Allah is all-wise, and all that emanates from Him, legislation-wise, is all-wise. He, the Almighty, would not assign a law that enables non-Muslims ways or non-Muslim guardianship to overcome Muslims. Allah would never assign such a law. Given this fact, a prescription follows, i.e., Muslims are not allowed to grant non-Muslim, non-Islamic guardianship or non-Islamic governance the power to overcome them. They're not allowed to grant non-Islamic guardianship so that it overpowers or overcomes Muslims. Any form of non-Muslim penetration and governance throughout Muslim communities in all domains, economic, cultural, military, political, etc., must be shut off by Muslims, because Allah's given His promise. With my protocol, Allah is saying, there's no way that non-Muslims, non-Islamic guardianship, the kuffar, can overcome you. Allah is saying this. It will never happen. So when it's happening, you're doing something wrong. When it's happening, the Muslim communities are failing. Look, this is something which all the seminary asatid and teachers, they explain this in the subject of usul al-fiqh. Okay, they give examples such as that this rationale is one of the wisdoms why a Muslim sister can't marry a non-Muslim. Okay, they can't marry a non-Muslim brother, a non-Muslim man. And the reason is this, because of this principle of nafyu sabil, because you're granting, with such a marriage, you're granting that non-Muslim power and governance over a Muslim. That's not allowed. And so if it's happening, something is going wrong. It has to be amended. So it must be shut off by Muslims. This is a universal prescription with which one must apply when constructing one's lifestyle. When you want to make an Islamic lifestyle, this has to be always borne in mind. One's lifestyle and plans and future for oneself, family and society. So that's a summary of this principle. It applies to why Muslim sisters should not marry non-Muslim men. However, on a more grand scale, on a more international level, Muslims are not allowed to live somewhere where they are overcome, predominated by kuffar law. This is a something wrong here. And that's why migration is one solution. Now, someone may say, well, migration is if I can't practice Islam here. But here in England, I can practice Islam very freely. I'm okay. So why should I migrate? This was explained. This wajtanibu taghut is part of Islam. It's not something outside Islam. Islam is just not whether gelatin is halal or haram, or you want to pray and you fast. Is that it? That's only part of the picture. U'budillah wajtanibu taghut. The taghuti side has to be seen. When you are under non-Islamic guardianship, it's belittling, because there are things you are doing which goes against this principle of the Holy Quran, when this shouldn't be the case. So why should we let it be the case? So that verse is something which the scholars have extracted a principle, and this principle we can treat as a prescription when we want to construct our Islamic lifestyle. Now, let's go to the next theme, which this is all flowing from one after the other. In one holy verse of the Holy Quran, it reads, Ya ayyuhar rasul, balligh ma unzila ilayka min rabbik. That propagate that which has been revealed to you from your Lord. Now, this was given at the end of the 23-year mission of the Holy Messenger. This has to be borne in mind. This is given towards the end. And it's in relation to successorship. This is in relation to after the Prophet, Islam has to continue. Islam has to be enforced. And the Prophet here, and this verse was revealed during the Hajj season, and all the commentators of the Quran in this verse, they all accept this. But what is it that the Holy Messenger, who has been instructed to propagate something, and it's towards the end of the mission, and it's so important that وَإِن لَمْ تَفْعَلْ, if you don't do it, فَمَا بَلَغْتَ رِسَالَتَ, you wouldn't have sent the message. The message would be deficient. You see? And this is when the successorship of Amir al-Mu'mineen was declared. Although it was declared before too. But this was a final proof. But the verse is saying, if you don't do it, Islam is going to be deficient. You wouldn't have conveyed the message. What is the message? It's not about ghusl and salat and wudu. That's all been done. This is towards the end of the mission. This is highlighting that after the Prophet, Islam continues. And Islam has to be enforced. And here the Holy Messenger is assigning the successorship to Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam. And this we have traditions that Amir al-Mu'mineen was the successor. But even if we did, if we had no traditions whatsoever, the Holy Prophet, who's a maximum manifestation of Allah's attributes, that's the reality of the Prophet. The successor also has to be a maximum manifestation of Allah's attributes, a manifestation of the divine attributes of perfection. So even if we had no hadith, you go and see who is manifesting the divine attributes of perfection most. An objective, unbiased mind would say it's Amir al-Mu'mineen. You compare the players who were there, Amir al-Mu'mineen is the definite successor. And you don't even need ahadith. Even without ahadith, you can ascertain this. So here, this is the message. And then the verse continues. وَاللَّهُ يَأْسِمُكَ مِنَ النَّاسِ Allah will protect you from the people. So it shows that this is sensitive because people want the power of Islam. This enforcement of Islam has power with it. It's a power struggle. People are wanted. But don't worry, we will protect you from the people. Islam has to be enforced. Islam continues. It needs an enforcer. It started with the 12 successors. And even in all books from all denominations, they say the successors after me are 12 and they come from Bani Hashim. And in some traditions, they mention the names. Now, although here too, we shouldn't be complacent that there are some traditions that say that if one would stand up and do ibadat for the lifetime, you know, equal to the lifetime of Prophet Noah. Or for example, give infaq and charity to the amount of gold which has the weight of Mount Uhud. Or they walk the Hajj for 1,000 years, every year they were to do it. And they were to be martyred between Safa and Marwa, the mountains. Here, if they don't accept the wilaya of Amir al-Mu'mineen, the taste of the aroma of heaven, they will not reach. And this hadith is correct. But some interpretations are incorrect here. Here, we don't mean a historical Amir al-Mu'mineen. Here, it means how much of the divine attributes of perfection, which Amir al-Mu'mineen maximally manifests, how much do you manifest? Do you manifest these attributes to the proportion you manifest the attributes of divine perfection? You are following the wilaya of Amir al-Mu'mineen. So you may be a Sunni even, and historically you believe the first Khalifa is someone else. 1400 years has passed. So that's a historical discussion. But the attributes of Allah, you're manifesting. And to the degree you are manifesting, to that degree you are a follower of Amir al-Mu'mineen. And therefore, of course, you'll taste heaven to some degree. Yes, 1400 years ago, those who rejected Amir al-Mu'mineen in the face, yet they themselves didn't manifest any of the divine attributes of perfection. And therefore they rejected Amir al-Mu'mineen. It was a power struggle. And for them, yes, it's plausible to say they won't taste the aroma of heaven. But you can't say that with all Sunnis, even today. The heaven many Sunnis may attain to may be higher than the Shias. The mizan and balance is Amir al-Mu'mineen. Well, it's the Prophet, then Amir al-Mu'mineen, a maximum manifestation of Allah's attributes. How much of that have you incorporated? To the degree you've incorporated it, you're a follower of Amir al-Mu'mineen. You're under the wilaya of Amir al-Mu'mineen. Okay? So that's another point that has to be mentioned. Now, given that verse and traditions such as the one we've mentioned, We've appreciated that Islam continues. It starts with the Holy Messenger, then Amir al-Mu'mineen, and then the next perfect human, and the next, and the next. And then we come to the 12th successor. And we all follow the 12th successor. But then the 12th successor goes into occultation. What is our duty there? This is the second Ghadiri test. This is the second test of Ghadiri Khom. The first one was 1400 years ago. This is another one. And here we ended last night's session with this verse of the Holy Quran, chapter 3, verse 144. وَمَا مُحَمَّدٌ صلى الله عليه وسلم إِلَّا رَسُولٌ. The Holy Prophet was but a messenger. قَدْ خَلَتْ مِنْ قَبْلِهِ الرُّسُولِ. And before him has passed messengers. أَفَإِمْ مَاتَ أَوْ قُتِلْ إِنْ قَلَبْتُمْ عَلَىٰ أَعْقَابِكُمْ. If he was to die or be killed, will you turn back on your heels? Remember, that means giving the okay to the Taghuti line. Would you do that? Just because the Holy Messenger has died or he's been killed, you say, put Islam on hold. Of course not. This is evident in numerous verses of the Quran. Islam continues. Islam is greater than the Prophet. Islam continues. Now that's the verse. Now, what I'm about now to say is my own understanding. I haven't taken it from anywhere. If someone had mentioned it, naturally I would have quoted them. So this is my own understanding. So don't panic. You don't have to accept it. There's no reason to be shocked or anything. But with the preliminary points I've mentioned, the fact that we have al-Islam, the Prophet dies, does Islam have to continue and be enforced or not? We say yes, with Amir al-Mu'mineen. Amir al-Mu'mineen is killed. Next, and the next, and the next, and the next, until the 12th Imam. Then the 12th Imam goes into occultation. The same question arises. Does Islam have to continue or not? And if so, if you say no, well then Islam has been abrogated. You've cut it off. Whereas we say Islam is a religion of eternal religion to the end of time. If you say yes, well, who are you going to get it from? The Boris Johnsons or other people? The Bin Salmans or from just people? Where are you going to get it from? So, with this verse, the next two propositions I'm going to read are, they're not verses of the Holy Quran, but one can extrapolate it from the Holy Quran. So, this is not a verse of the Holy Quran, it's an extrapolation. So, وَمَا مَهْدِيٌ إِلَّا إِمَامٌ. The Mahdi, the 12th successor of the Holy Messenger, is nothing but an Imam. قَدْ خَلَتْ مِنْ قَبْلِهِ الْأَئِمَّةِ. And before him has passed other Imams. أَفَإِنْ غَابَ. If he was to go into occultation, which he has gone into. إِنْ قَلَبْتُمْ أَلَا أَعْقَابِكُمْ. Will you turn back on your heels? Would you go the Taghuti way? This was explained last night. Of course you can't, because Islam still continues. The Rasul was the last Rasul. The Imam is the last Imam, successor to the Holy Messenger. He's gone into occultation. What are you going to do now? Here you go to the Fuqaha. You go to the jurists and the most learned of them. Now, it may be one person, it may be a group of them, that's another discussion. But you get it from the wali of the amr. We call it the waliya amr. It may paraphrase, it means Islamic leadership. But the matter lies now with the wali of the time. We don't have any rasul now. We don't have an imam, the technical definition. But wali we have. Wali are those who are disciples of Allah. They manifest Allah's attributes. And so now we can do another extrapolation. Who is the wali of our times? Now, here I'm mentioning Imam Khomeini as the wali of the times, because you have to go through a particular protocol, and it's a qualification, a group of people, the most learned ones, who have a mandate, they have to choose. The legitimacy of the wali has to be ascertained and acknowledged by a group of mujtahids who know what it means to be a wali. Now, it can be wali faqih, wali am, these can be used interchangeably. But it means Islamic leadership. You don't want to go elsewhere to get your Islam from. That in itself is belittling. So you go and to the most learned mujtahids, and there may be a group in Iran, a group of, let's say, 80 mujtahids, they point you to one direction. There may be a group of 5 mujtahids in Iraq, they may point you to another direction. You have to see which one is the strongest. Which one has a proper mandate? Otherwise, it's potentially possible there may be more than one person at a given time who have the legitimacy to be a wali, but they don't have the justification yet. It has to come with a mandate. The legitimacy is ascertained through a group of true mujtahids. The justification, it needs a mandate. And of course, there has to be someone who claims they have the wilaya today. Otherwise, if no one is claiming it, you can't go to someone who's not even claiming it. So, here, the next proposition is this from this verse. وَمَا خُمَيْنِيٌ إِلَّا وَلِي Imam Khomeini was but a wali. قَدْ خَلَتْ مِنْ قَبْلِهِ الْأَوْلِيَا And before him there were walis in every phase and every time. أَفَإِمْ مَاتَ أَوْ قُتِلْ If he was to die or be killed, would you turn back on your heels again? So if the 12th Imam was to go in occultation, would you go back on your heels? The answer has to be no. Therefore, you have to find a wali who, like the Holy Prophet, like Amirul Mu'mineen, like the other successors, is going to enforce Islam. Now, sometimes they may not have a mandate and they can't, but sometimes they succeed. So are you going to neglect them? Now, my opinion is that the wali faqih was Imam Khomeini these days, in contemporary times. But if someone thinks the wali faqih is someone else, why should I bother about it? Why should I argue with them? Everyone to their own abidance of the correct protocol. Now, we may err in the particularities. But Imam Khomeini now is the wali. In choosing the wali, the mujtahids have a difficult task, because this wali has to be a manifestation of the divine attributes of perfection. So look, Allah has, let's say, 100 attributes. They have to manifest it. But they're not ma'sum. They're not like the ma'sumin. So what the mujtahid said, look, let's focus on a number of attributes. Knowledge is important. Taqwa is important. Justice is important. Being courageous is important. Being competent is important. Look at all these divine attributes of perfection. Who manifests these more? Well, you just have to look at Imam Khomeini's life. It's an easy, objective analysis that he is the one wali compared to other people. When he was in Iraq, in exile, when many Ayatollahs would bow down to the Ba'athi police regime, when they would enter the mosque, the Ba'athi people, many Ayatollahs would stand and bow down to them out of fear. Imam Khomeini would just remain sitting. He wasn't scared of anyone. He gave his life for Islam. Moment to moment, he was ready to die. Okay, he didn't die a physical death, but he was a shaheed since 50, 60, 70 years ago. Because he led a jihadi, shahada lifestyle. He was fighting for the cause, moment to moment. The fact that he didn't die a physical death is neither here or there. The fact was he led a life of shahada. No one can be compared to him. Although that's my personal opinion and the opinion of a number of mujtahids in Iran. And at that time, Ayatollah Beheshti told Ayatollah Mohsen Araki, go and tell Shahid Sadr that if they were to assassinate Imam Khomeini, our group of mujtahids have assigned Shahid Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr as the Wali Amr, if they were to kill Imam Khomeini. That's, you have to see which group of mujtahids for you is more proof, which are more stronger. And now in Iran, there's a group of 80-odd people, mujtahids, and they choose. But Imam Khomeini had this attribute that he was one of the mukhlaseen. Although defining mukhlaseen is very difficult right now because it requires a lecture on its own. But he was, not permanently, but for many phases of his life, he was one of the mukhlaseen. And in the Quran, it says that Iblis has no jurisdiction over the mukhlaseen. And that's why it's important. The guidelines Imam Khomeini has given, this is why it's important. Because there are guidelines where satanic interference has no role. So when Imam Khomeini says America is Shaitan Buzor, the great Satan, this is a big statement. It's a protocol to which we have to evaluate our lives. Then, with the next leader after Imam Khomeini, the same continues. Islam has to continue. And one after the other, we have leaders. We have to have them. Islam minus this would be American Islam. You're following American Islam. It's a classification Imam Khomeini himself gave. We have Muhammadan Islam and American Islam. Muhammadan Islam, ani'budullah wajtanibu taghut. American Islam is ani'budullah. And we will finance you to do ibadah of Allah. We'll help you. We'll help you build bigger and bigger places. Just forget the second part though. Wajtanibu taghut. That's American Islam. Now, here, with your permission, I'll end the last few minutes by saying one or two points. When we have a leader, like Ayatollah Khomeini, for example, we obey him to the dot. He is the wali. And therefore, we have to see what is his worldview, what are the statements he gives, and we abide by it maximally. Now, naturally, we don't have access to him himself, but he has representatives, be it in England, be it in France, be it in America, and so on and so forth. Abidance of the representative is also binding. Without doubt, without question, we obey the representatives too. Just like abiding by the wali himself. Now sometimes the representative may make a mistake. they may make a big mistake. It's possible. Even the Wali himself may make a mistake, but there they have a group of mujtahids overlooking every penny that comes in and out of his house, the office. It's controlled. There's a very strong monitoring system over the Wali today. If he steps out, he can be easily discarded. And this has happened before in Iran with the deputy Wali Faqih, who was meant to be the next. He was controlled and he was discarded as a result of wrongdoings. But the representative too, they may make a mistake. It's theoretically possible. Look, what I'm trying to explain is some theoretical, you know, etiquettes here. We obey the representative. Those things which don't look right, like with the processions I was explaining. But when he gives the green light, we silence ourselves and we say, we will also follow you. Sometimes, and because they're working the best interest and we have to give them the benefit of the doubt, they're more able than us, they're more involved, they have the bigger picture. So we shouldn't, you know, be hesitant. When they do things, we have to always go with them. Sometimes though, the error caused by the representative can be drastically significant. Even there, we silence ourselves. We don't go against the representative even, because that will compromise the office of the actual leader. It looks bad. It's a form of disrespect. Look, they've done something wrong, and it's significant. But even there, on the outside, we respect them. But we then write a letter or notify the leader's office of what's happening. But we shouldn't go and retaliate against the representative and make the office of the leader look bad. This can be very damaging. Rather, we remain quiet and have that respect, but notify the office of the significant wrongdoings, and then they will take the next step. That's the correct order. In the imposed war against Iran, recently a book has come out where the walkie-talkie conversations between the shuhada, they've made a transcript of it. It's a very good read. One of the shuhada, by the name of Shahid Ibrahim Himmat, and he was born after 6 months. It was a very quick delivery, like Imam Hussein. And the mother's prayer was, "Oh Allah, give me a son who comes like Imam Hussein and leaves the world like Imam Hussein, alayhi salam." And his martyrdom, he was beheaded. And the story is quite, I don't have time to explain it, but it's a very important story. With true khulus, he had true sincerity. And he only wanted to please and do exercise his duty and please the Imam of the time, Imam Khomeini at that time. In one of the dialogues, he's saying to his senior, Rahim Safawi, who's also a very noble man. I once had the pleasure to sit. I wasn't speaking with him, but we were in the same assembly. He was always saying, "Ya Sahib al-Amr, Ya Sahib al-Amr." He was always recalling the 12th Imam. There was a difference of opinion between the two of them. Now they're talking on the walkie-talkie. He's in the battlefield. One of them is outside the battlefield. But Himmat is in the battlefield. He said, "No, we shouldn't do plan A. Let's do this plan, another plan." Rahim Safavi said, "No, you stick with plan A. We have to continue." Shahid Himmat said, "No, but this is going to cause problems." Safavi replied, "I'm your senior." Then Shahid Himmat said, "Okay, since you have said it, and you're my senior, closer to the Imam, I'm not am not ready for the Imam to be disappointed, to see if there's any disunity. I'm not ready for that. I will obey you. And Shaykh Himmat was right at the end. And he knew this was the right action, but he obeyed the senior. In closeness to Imam Khomeini, Rahim Safavi was of a higher level. He was the senior in charge. But he obeyed. This is important. And so for a protocol for us, who have this opportunity to be in contact with the representatives, this has to be abided by, inshallah. Now, I'll end here. I know there are many questions. Many things have been mentioned and there are many questions. Inshallah, in the right time, we'll go through all these questions, inshallah. I want to thank AIM, their team. They've been very patient with me. The community has been very patient. And if I've disappointed anyone, I apologize. And inshallah, there'll be more discussions and you'll give me the honor to share more and more days and nights with you. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammad wa alihi at-tahirin.